Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, August 31st, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and you click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that particular chapter of that book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for a little over 18 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We also have available on that same webpage a list of the audio files of shows just like this one that have been curated out specifically because people have called in and been stepped through the worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the use of that worksheet in their lives has produced powerful, positive benefits. And if you don't have the ability or willingness to call in and get direct support in doing a worksheet on the internet show, or if you don't have the ability to join us for the support groups or have a support group in your area, listening to those archived shows is a wonderful way to create your own tutorial, to get better and better at understanding the dynamics of these worksheets and how they can benefit you in your life. And we are hopeful that people will do any and all of that soon and often, primarily because our experience is that it improves people's quality of life when they apply these tools to their life, and secondarily because it frequently prompts them to have comments or questions or answers or testimonials. And if you have any of that to share with us, please feel free to give us a call at 563-999-3581. And when you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation, which we're always glad when people do. It makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work when people call and let us know, how is this resonating for you? How is it helpful or not so helpful? What's a specific issue you might want us to help you frame out a worksheet for, or actually step through a worksheet process with you? What are you gaining from our review of the Way of Mastery and turning these shows, quite a few of them, since the vast majority of them since January 10th, basically turning them into darshans about the Way of Mastery lessons, going through them very slowly and carefully with commentary? How is that landing for you? How could we make it even more beneficial? If you have any comments or questions or answers or testimonials for us in that regard, you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@yagain.org. That's whyagain.org. Or you can give us a call at 563-999-3581. And I like to remind people that even if we're in the middle of reading from the Way of Mastery or in some part of a monologue, like yesterday's show ended up being an overview of the first 19 lessons, we welcome you to call in and put your hand up, even if it seems like we're on a roll talking about something else. So let us know how we can support you. Let us know what's working for you, what's not working for you. We had a support group last night, and we listened to a little bit of the new book by Michael Singer. He's got a new book out titled Living Untethered, and that book was just released this year, 2022. So the three books that I know about that he has are The Untethered Soul, and then The Surrender Experiment, and then he has an online course that's called Living from a Place of Surrender that was 8 sessions long, and now he has the book Living Untethered. And the overlap and the synchronicity between his teachings in these books and in his online course and the work we're doing and reading about in The Way of Mastery is mind-boggling for me. I mean, it's clear that these people have been tapping into the same source material or the same source wisdom. And just like Bill Hicks and his Life is Like a Ride in an Amusement Park, that little skit that he did or that little quote that he put out years ago, to my mind, it is almost identical to what we're studying here in The Way of Mastery. It's a choice between love and fear. You can change your experience of the ride. You can choose to label the energy you're feeling as terror or exhilaration. And whatever you label it as will be a big part of what creates your experience of that series of events or of its impact on you. So, the other thing I was going to mention is that the way the show was unfolding yesterday, not the show, but the support group last night was unfolding, we found near the end of the support group time that one of the members said, oh my gosh, that was wonderful, and that should be, you know, listened to again. And And then they mentioned that that was similar to the dreamsicle analogy. And I just burst out laughing because I'd completely forgotten about the dreamsicle analogy, which happened last Thursday. And as fate would have it, I was able to make extra time this morning. I had to get up extra early to make good on a commitment with somebody. And so I was able to edit out these two excerpts from last Thursday's group and last night's group. And they are now on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website on the page where it says Archive of Thursday's Groups or something similar. And the very top file on that page is a 26-minute compilation of these two separate excerpts, if anybody's interested. One of them is talking about the process of memory reconciliation, which is a key dynamic that they're researching and understanding about how we can change the meaning within our mind-body-energy system. We can change the meaning of the memories we have. We can change the emotional content that we have loaded for a memory or the beliefs that we've downloaded about ourselves or about our safety in the world through the interactions we've had with events in our lives, which is essentially what's happening every time we do a reality management worksheet. And we demonstrate to ourselves that we are the ones creating our upset, that we are the ones either creating it in this very moment by how we're pouring our mind energy into a particular pattern of thoughts, or we've chosen an interpretation for the life events as we think they're unfolding today that resonates a negative emotional state or a traumatic energy that we have downloaded into our system from some time in the past. And if we become aware at a conscious level that that's what's going on, then we can start to affect change in that dynamic within us. And there are some details about it that, you know, they're doing research on the window of time that's available and what needs to happen in order for that change to take place. And it's called memory reconsolidation. And so that's one of the excerpts. And the other one is this bizarre thing that flowed out of an interaction last Thursday that uses the analogy of the dreamsicle. And it was tying into the I don't remember whether it was Dale Allen Hoffman or it was a Michael Singer talk, but anyway. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and we have plenty of time for a question or a comment or an observation. So let us know what's on your mind and or what you would like to do related to reviewing some part of the first 19 lessons or moving forward into Lesson 20. Lesson 19, again, was titled Surrender the Dream of the Dreamer. In other words, wake up and realize that you are not separate from your source. You can't ever be separate from your source. And when you create the belief that you are and then you take an action from it, you're making it more difficult for yourself to see the truth of your life, of your true essence. And you're making it more difficult for yourself to be in this direct, conscious connection to the flow of life. Lesson 20 is titled Vigilance for the Kingdom. And the text reads, "We come forth to abide with you because you have asked." Now imagine that. Are you aware that you asked? are you aware that you've asked God, light, love, ascended masters, guides, spiritual entities, are you aware that you've asked them to come forth? If you're not aware of it, a conscious, logical, solid level, please wake up to that fact. The fact that you're listening to an audio file like this, or you're listening live to this internet broadcast, is the evidence that you have asked. We come forth to abide with you because you have asked. What have you asked? What are you asking for? What is it you want to try and get out of listening to an internet broadcast like this or reading a book like The Way of Mastery? That's a really good question for you to sit with a little bit. And a couple times in the first 19 lessons, it says, if you haven't approached this work from the perspective of, I wonder what it would be like to be a part of the Christ mind, or to operate from the space of being a Christed mind, it would be a good idea to do that right now. Take a breath or two before you go on. Slow that exhale down so you calm the physical body down and wake up to the fact that if you're listening to or reading a book like this, you're asking for something. You're asking for guidance. You're asking for connection to something that's more integrated than what appears to be your separate conscious logical mind. The text goes on and says, we come forth to abide with you because we are part of you. We exist where you are. We abide as the capital T truth of what you are. You are pure spirit. Your choice is always love or fear. In other words, your choice is always the actuality of life and the miracle of the creative energy of life expressing in form as you, or a dream of separation and the fear that that creates. The text goes on. Therefore, beloved friends, please well understand that when we reach back into time, into the field of what you call physicality, to create a communication with you, we do not come to you from some other location. We come forth unto you from the depth of the heart, the essence of that which, capital M, mind truly is, that which, capital L, love truly is, that which consciousness emerges from. We are coming to you from where you are because you exist as consciousness and all of the essence of everything that you perceive as external to you is arising within your consciousness. We come forth from capital R reality, actuality, and we join with you in the only place that genuine communication can occur. Where is that? Right here, right now, in capital R reality, or in capital A, actuality. The text goes on. This can only mean that in those moments when you feel, not merely intellectually consider, but when you feel yourself immediately and truly comprehending that which is communicated by the words we choose, in that moment, you do not abide in time. In that moment, you do not abide in illusion. You abide in reality. You abide in actuality. You abide in essence, awake and aware of your connection to all of creation. In that moment, there is quite literally no distance between us. We speak here of distance, not just in the way you would think of it, physical terms, but there is also no distance between us qualitatively. That is, in that moment, when you receive the capital T truth, it is not the case that we are above you or beyond you or have even gone ahead of you a little. You are comprehending the essence of truth from the essence of Christ mind, which is the only mind that can comprehend the capital T truth and the capital R reality of creation. That truth is necessarily within you and has been within you since before the birthing of time. So you might remember, if you've been through with us through these last 19 lessons, there was talk in a previous lesson about how your consciousness, your awareness, this essence of the ability to be aware, which is you, is not separate from any other mind and existed before there was any physicality, before there was any stardust, before there were any atoms, before there was any light. You, your essence, existed before any physicality. And the essence of you and the truth of your nature has been within you since before the birthing of time. It has been with you since before a tiny mad idea seemed, it didn't actually, but it just seemed to creep across the expanse of your mind. And then you chose to believe it. That reality cannot be taken from you. It is from that reality that you have awareness of your own existence. It is from that reality that you gather the fuel to create the perceptions that you most desire. And the perceptions that you most desire are precisely the ones that you are experiencing in any given moment. Now this comes up, and we had somebody in the support group last night who railed against this. There was a statement almost exactly like that. This goes to Guy Finley's talking about when you choose anger in response to a current situation, it's because in that moment you value your anger. When you generate fear in response to a current moment situation, it's because in that moment you are valuing fear. If you're generating anxiety, and this was the touch point for one of the people in the group last night, it's because you value your anxiety in that moment above peace, above serenity, above gratitude. And the person in the group didn't like that and wanted to push back on it. But here it is again. At the bottom of the first page of Lesson 20, in the large blue book of the Way of Mastery, it says, it is from that reality that you gather the fuel to create the perceptions that you most desire. And the perceptions that you most desire are precisely the ones that you are experiencing in any given moment. So if you're experiencing anxiety in this moment, it's because you are valuing the perceptions that you're using to create anxiety. There is no other dynamic that causes your anxiety. Just take a breath or two and let that sink in. In these times where I'm awake in the middle of the night and I can't get to sleep and I hate it and I know that I need sleep so that my body functions and my mind is spinning and I've done everything I can think to get some sleep. And in that moment when I'm spinning and having anxiety, it is because I am valuing that perception of my being unable to sleep and my being anxious above all other perceptions that I might create. And the perceptions that you most desire are precisely the ones that you are experiencing in any given moment. That's how it's stated in this Way of Mastery Lesson 20. Now, the text goes on and says, now, those of you that were abiding in reality, in the truth of life, in actuality, as you heard those words, you immediately know that that means that at no time and under no circumstance are your perceptions being thrown upon you from some source or force outside of you. You know that in each moment, you and you alone have created the perception and therefore the experience you are having, and you've done it within the field of the mind for no other reason than you have desired it. Think about that. Let that sink in. How does that bounce off of your experience of life? How does that mesh with what you've been taught in the Western world? Everything you're experiencing. This is a simple restatement of what's in the first lesson on page 5. You experience only the effects of your choices of thought. Nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. And it says here, it's from that reality that you gather the fuel to create the perceptions you most desire. And the perceptions that you most desire are precisely the ones that you are experiencing in any given moment. Now, those of you who were abiding in actuality, in capital R reality, as you heard those words, you immediately know that that means that at no time and under no circumstances are your perceptions ever being thrown upon you from some source or force outside of you. You now know that in each moment, you and you alone have created the perception and therefore the experience you are having within the field of the mind, and you've done it for no other reason than that you have desired it. Even if at a conscious level, you have no desire for what you're experiencing, and you have no memory of choosing to desire it at any time in the past. Clearly, they're pointing here to something that goes beyond and outside and around and through the conscious logical mind, because I don't have any awareness in my conscious logical mind that I've desired to be an anxious wreck who can't sleep at night, or a nervous wreck who's worried about how are people going to receive the internet show, or will people show up for the support group on a Tuesday or Thursday night? Or will I ever have enough money to retire? If I'm generating anxiety about any of those things, I don't have any conscious awareness that I'm desiring to generate that upset. So clearly this is talking about the level of mind, that spiritual, that soul base, that consciousness that goes beyond the physicality of the mind and my simple memories of what I did in the last few years to get here. But in that consciousness, in those levels of expansive connection to all of creation, if I'm having an experience within the field of my mind, it's happening for no other reason than I have desired it. The text goes on and says, this is why the very pathway of awakening, regardless of the form it takes, is always a retraining of the mind. Think about that. The path of awakening, whatever the form it takes, is always a retraining of the mind. it is a decision to choose to discipline the mind in each moment so that the mind chooses to teach only love. The mind chooses to hold only loving thoughts and to recognize that there is no such thing as an idle thought, since each thought or perception held in the mind immediately generates your experience. That experience is like a pebble dropped into a pond that sends out a reverberation, a vibration, throughout the field of your being. And that field goes far, far beyond what you commonly perceive to be the boundaries of your body. The field of your being goes far, far beyond what you commonly perceive to be the boundaries of your body. So clearly, this is not talking about the simple conscious logical mind, the carbon-based memory, the brain in your head, all these various words for that part of the brain mind which can only record what is poured into it and play it back when it's called on. That's what the Guy Finley calls the mechanical level of mind. Michael Rice calls it the 9-bit mind or the carbon-based memory. The Way of Mastery calls it the intellect, which has just been shoved full of trivialities. All of these great teachings are understanding that we have different levels of functioning intellectually, spiritually, consciously. And again, one more time, this teaching is trying to help us wake up to the fact that that field of your being goes far, far beyond what you commonly perceive of as the boundaries of your body. The next segment in this lesson 20 is titled What you desire, you experience. It reads, beloved friends, you will only experience what you desire. That is why desire is always the first and most fundamental key to the process of awakening. It is why desire is the energy known equally by all minds in all kingdoms, in all dimensions, and in all worlds. It is by desire that you choose to relinquish the value you have placed upon limited perception. It is by desire that you decide to teach only love. It is by desire that the kingdom is restored to your mind. For it is by desire that you have been birthed from the holy mind of creation. Now, that paragraph, you could read it 100 times, and it will start to morph into something else. Maybe every time you read it, maybe every 10th time you read it. But the heading of this segment alone is enough to create resistance and tension in most people that hear it. What you desire, you experience. Okay, so I'm sitting here desiring, you know, the most glorious of Caribbean vacations with my partner. What's happening? Come, I'm still here in Illinois. My mind will fight against this. My logic will want to refute it. And when that happens, if I pay attention, I'll feel the tension in the energy system we call the body. When I feel that tension, if I choose to, I develop the tools, I can immediately begin to dismantle it and soften and ask to be shown something else. The segment is titled, What You Desire, you experience. And the text reads, beloved friends, you will only experience what you desire. That would be a wonderful mind shifter for most of us, to put that on the left side of a sheet of paper and draw a line, a vertical line, one-third of the way from the left to the right, and write that. I only experience what I desire. I have only experienced what I have desired. Either one of those. Write that on the left-hand side. Block out an hour or two of time to start writing a response. I guarantee you, at a minimum, most of us could fill up 5 or 6 pages of refutation against that statement. And the more we write that we have only experienced what we have desired, the more our life experience and the beliefs we have about it are going to spill out on the page. I certainly didn't desire to be beaten by the bullies when I was 14. I certainly didn't desire to have this genetic disease is passed down from my bloodline. I certainly didn't desire for my name your best friend or family member that died recently or get cancer. I certainly didn't desire this. And that would be what you could write on the right-hand side in response to the statement that's on the left-hand side that says, I only experience what I desire. I have only experienced in my life what I have desired. That sounds an absolutely absurd statement. And at one level of conscious, logical actuality, it is absurd. And yet at other levels, it's absolutely true. The text goes on and says, that is why desire, this energy that they talked about in the fourth lesson, this energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment, that's why that is always the first and most fundamental key to the process of awakening. Learning to tune into, to align my vibrational antennas to that energy. It is why desire is the energy known equally by all minds and all kingdoms and all dimensions and in all worlds. So what are we talking about here? We're talking about something that has a lot deeper meaning than what my mind has loaded up emotionally and otherwise, experientially, for a word like desire. Because I'm talking about, you know, craving a dreamsicle, or I'm talking about, you know, I can't wait to get off work so I can get home and pound a few shots and take the edge off, so to speak. Or I'm talking about my desire is, name the person, name the car, name the stereo system, name the bank account number. Well, that desire can't be what they're talking about here when they say it's an energy that's known equally by all minds and all kingdoms and all dimensions and all worlds. What about those dimensions where they don't have physicality or where they don't have cars? It can't be the same. It's an energy that we're talking about. We're not talking about the impressions that get generated in my mind, the specific thoughts about this thing or that person or that situation. We're talking about the energy underneath it that brings it into my awareness. We're not talking about the specific desires or cravings. This energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment is the energy that is equally known by all minds, in all kingdoms, in all dimensions, in all worlds. It is by desire, it is by that energy of creation that you eventually choose to relinquish the value you have placed on your limited perception. When you awaken, it's not you doing it. You didn't create yourself. You don't know when you were created. The desire to awaken, the desire to have a spiritual integration is not something you initiate. It's something you can block out or you can nurture, but you didn't give rise to it any more than you gave rise to yourself. It is from this energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment, short word for it, desire, is what makes you choose to relinquish the value you have placed upon your limited perceptions. It is from this impulse of creation itself arising within you that you decide to teach only love. It is from this impulse of the energy of creation arising within you that the kingdom is restored to your mind. For it is by this desire or this energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in this moment that you have been birthed from the holy mind of creation itself. You are part of the one mind, of the one flow of creative energy, and it is that flow of creative energy itself which is ever expanding, which creates everyone and everything, and is being used to create every thought and every emotion. The text goes on and says, the simplest way to discover what it is that you desire in any moment is to simply stop and observe, quote, what thoughts are currently taking place within my mind? How am I perceiving the world that seems to be around my body? Close quotes. And most especially, observe the following, quote, how am I perceiving myself in this moment? Close quotes. With honesty, you will see quite quickly and quite easily what it is you have most desired to experience in this moment. Because you only experience what you have desired to experience. The text goes on and says, it can indeed be quite shocking when awareness begins to turn back on itself to observe the mechanics of its own thinking processes in the world. And then to hold the thought that the thoughts that are dancing in the mind are there for no other reason than that they have been desired by the truth of who you are. So to back up and read that again, here's an acknowledgement. This teaching knows it's running headlong into and against everything you've been taught in your conscious logical mind from the Western world. It says, quote, it can indeed be quite shocking when awareness begins to turn back on itself and begins to observe the mechanics of how its own thinking process in the world is unfolding. And then to hold the thought that the thoughts that are dancing in the mind are there for no other reason than that they have been desired by the truth of who you are. That's a big shock to the system. And again, if you stopped and you did the mind shifter, you turned this into a mind shifter where it says, I have only ever experienced that which I have desired. And you've let all of the parts of your mind that want to argue against that spill out on the page, you might have discovered deeper levels of the truth of who you are and of how running headlong against and arguing for the very experience you're creating moment to moment, day in and day out in your life, has kept you running on a treadmill. The text goes on and says, you are that power which has been birthed from the mind of creation, made in creation's image, that is, with infinite power to create what you choose to experience. Desire, then, is integral to the understanding of the very process of transformation. For what you desire you do experience. This is where Michael might say, you know, this is one of the things that the Greeks had right when they said, guard the portals of the mind. If you let yourself entertain thoughts, the longer you let yourself spin in thoughts of I'm no good and self-loathing and I'm stupid and I'm not worthy, and the longer you do that, the more you create the experience of not being worthy and not being smart enough. You are the power. You are that very power which has been birthed from the mind of creation. You have been made in creation's image. That is, you've been made with infinite power to create what you choose to experience. Desire, then, this energy of creation as it wants to express uniquely through you in each new present moment, desire is integral to the understanding of the very process of transformation. For what you desire, you do experience. So you didn't give rise to this urge to awaken. That's the energy of creation expressing through you. You do have the ability to turn away from it. You do have the ability to clamp down on it and restrict it, constrict, tense up, fight against it. But it's the actual energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment that is this thing they're calling desire. And it's that impulse from creation itself that wants to awaken. The text goes on and says, when I walked upon your planet as a man, seemingly cloaked in a body or as a body, I too had need of learning to observe the nature of my own mind and to discover what it was I was desiring in any given moment. Right? This is something that he's talked about, this book has talked about numerous times through this work. When he was young, he was given these exercises, some of them almost verbatim to what's coming out in the book. Some of them he's tweaked or improved or has had improved for him by other teachers. He has been taught to step into these experiences so that he can learn that there's more going on here than just this energy system that we call a physical body. The text goes on and says, vigilance for the kingdom means to retrain the mind until it desires only capital L love, only capital K kingdom, only enlightenment, only peace, only reality, what Michael Rice would call actuality. When the mind has been so retrained, in that moment, there is no longer any sense of a separate self that is struggling to find the Creator. There is no longer any sense of a separate self who knows lack. There is no longer any sense of a separate self that is unworthy of being the embodiment of the Christ mind. And in that moment, the body can seem to continue, or it could just disintegrate. The body itself will be perceived in a very different light. It will no longer be seen as something dense and hard that seems to separate you from your brothers or sisters. It is seen in that way only as a dance of shadow that provides Christ an opportunity, temporarily an opportunity, to speak the language of those that believe the body is yet real in order to communicate. This is almost exactly like one of the teachings Dr. Michael Rice said that he's kind of whammed into in the Course in Miracles, where it says you have this awakening, you tap into this different level of experience, and you realize the falseness of all of these things that we do in the physical world with the body and all these things we have all this value for, and then you come back not to prove that you're right and it's wrong, but to speak truth in a way that the people who still believe in the body can understand it. That paragraph again reads, the body itself will be perceived in a very different light when the vigilance for the kingdom has been retrained into the mind, until the mind desires only love, only the kingdom, only enlightenment, only peace, and only reality. When the mind has been so retrained in that moment, there is no longer any sense of separation, no longer a sense of a separate self struggling to find God or creation. There's no longer any sense of a separate self who knows lack. There's no longer any sense of a separate self that is unworthy of being the embodiment of Christ. And in that moment, the body might continue or it might just disintegrate. If the body goes on, the body itself will be perceived in a very different light. It will no longer be seen as something dense and hard that seems to separate you from your brothers or sisters. When that happens, it is seen only as a dance or a shadow that provides the Christ an opportunity to temporarily speak the language of those who believe the body is yet real in order to communicate with them and to drop a pebble in the pond, to think a thought and add your mind energy to it that sends a reverberation, a vibration through the body that is emanated and is recognized by everyone. Perhaps it's not accepted, but it will be recognized by everyone once the mind has been retrained so that it desires only love, only the kingdom, only enlightenment, only peace, and only reality. It might maintain its physical form as a body, but it does so only to communicate the truth of love, to teach only love, to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful in each new present moment. The text goes on and says, this is why you've heard many stories, some even related to me, that when a master walks upon the planet, something occurs in the energy field, the mind of those in his or her proximity. There is an energy that is transmitted. It is not that the master changes those around him or her. It is that the capital T truth in them is suddenly quickened into at least a very temporary remembrance of what is true. And when that happens, an illusion can be dropped, or perhaps all illusions can be dropped. The body becomes almost a magical means of communication. It appears to be something solid. It appears to be you, who you are. And yet, when the mind has been retrained thoroughly and the purification has been completed, the body simply becomes transparent and meaningless except for the extension of the light of love. I have shared with you many times, the text goes on and says, I have shared with you many times that to awaken as Christ requires that you begin your journey as Christ. It is not possible to transform yourself in order to become Christ, but it is possible to simply accept the idea of the truth and then let that be the foundation from which your life expresses itself, so that you begin to think with Christ, so that you begin to breathe with Christ, so that you begin to envision with Christ. What's happening here? We've been building. We've been building into the realization that we, from page five in the first lesson, Nothing you experience is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. What we're talking about here in Lesson 20 is that if you start asking, what is it that I've been desiring? How did I get here? If all of this is true, that I've only experienced that which I have desired in the seat of my soul, in the heart of the mind of the Creator where I rest. Not my conscious logical mind that can't wait to get another dreamsicle and chomp it down, but in the essence of my being. And I can ask, what thoughts are currently taking place within my mind? How am I perceiving the world that seems to be around the body? How am I perceiving myself in this moment? And the more I practice doing that with total, radical, raw honesty, deep honesty, I will begin to see quite quickly and easily how I have desired being here in this moment. It can be quite shocking when the awareness begins to turn back on itself to observe the mechanics of its thinking process in the world, and then to hold the thought that the thoughts that are dancing around in the mind are there for no other reason than that they have been desired by the truth, by the essence of your being as a process of awakening. You are that power. That power which has been birthed from the mind of creation, made in creation's image, and it is with that infinite power that you create what you choose to experience. Desire, then, this energy of creation that wants to express uniquely through you in each moment, is integral to the understanding of the very processes of transformation. And you waken to the fact that you desire whatever it is you desire, and then you instantly experience it. Once that happens, once you train yourself to desire only love, only the kingdom, only enlightenment, only peace, and only reality, the body becomes almost a magical means of communication. It may appear to be something solid. It may appear to be the same person, same height and weight, etc., facial features. And yet when the mind has been retrained thoroughly and the purification has been completed, the body simply becomes a transparent and a meaningless extension for this conduit to extend the light of love, the energy of creation, to extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful. And it happens when you wake up and realize that your life begins to express itself without all of the conditioning, without all the judgment, without all the egoic thought, and that you begin to think with Christ, and you begin to breathe with Christ, and you begin to envision with Christ. And in that way, in each new present moment, you extend the good, the holy, and the beautiful. So that's our hour. We're down to the last minute or so. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I will welcome Jeannie Rice, and I will click on the microphone on the switchboard to turn on her microphone. Welcome Jeannie Rice. And if she's talking, she's muted. And if she's not talking and she's not muted, it means she's busy with something else.
I'm here now.
So,
thank you.
So stick around for the second hour. Welcome Jeannie Rice.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah,
take care.
So welcome to the second. Thank you. Welcome to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, August the 31st, 2022. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in. Today's their first day of picking Aria up from school, so we have her this afternoon, and she said it was wonderful, so we're glad that she's having a good experience with that. I'll direct you all to our website, which is whyagain, whyagain.org, and we now have the recording to last Thursday's book club, and so it's now on the website, and excuse me. Okay, I'll read it in just a minute. And anyway, I see Michael, that Michael is already on with his hand up. I will give my Michael just a moment to dial in, and then I will turn on the other Michael's microphone. So we're glad to have everybody with us, and we have been going through, and I'm going to set them aside as special recordings on the website where Michael and Michael are going through the reality management worksheet. And so we'll have a whole collection there. And lots of good information, lots of great questions, and we appreciate you taking the time going through this worksheet. And we're looking forward to continuing it. Michael will be with us here in just a second. I had to sneeze there, so I've muted myself so I didn't blast everybody off. So we'd love to hear from you. I'm going to go ahead and turn on Michael's microphone. Welcome to the show. Michael will be with us here in just a second. Aria was hollering at him to do something. She hasn't seen him in over a week, and so she was grabbing his attention. So welcome to the show. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, doing great, thanks.
I had to pause a moment.
Yes, oh, not knowing which Michael I said.
Yes, I kind of hesitated for a minute. I was trying to think, is this the other Michael? So here we are. Wonderful to hear you all. And Arius is having a wonderful time at school.
Yeah, we picked her up. Her mom and dad picked her up on Monday, which was her first day. The other grandparents had her yesterday, so today was their first day picking her up, and she come flying down the sidewalk, nee, 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 and jumped up in my arms. Well, we have to sign her out, you know, security and show her identification and all that. And the teacher said, well, she had told me that Nene was coming to pick her up, so when she yells your name and runs into your arms, I figure that really must be you.
That's sweet. What a picture. What a picture. I just have to think of what a blessed little girl that is to have both grandparents and both parents in her life. That is, that's remarkable today.
Yeah, it is.
And her grandparents on the other side are teaching her Tagalog. They're from Philippines, so she's learning another language as well.
And in kindergarten, they're going to be teaching them Spanish.
Papa? Yes, sweetie.
Well,
the bug and the dino are in the other room if you want to go get them. Okay. Just before she left, we were taking her home. It's in your room. And the bug book's there too, yes. We have a children's encyclopedia type book on dinosaurs, and I found one on the body, and she is just so into anatomy and physiology. So the day before we left for vacation, she asked if I could get her the body book, so I got it. And so she came in before the show started wanting me to read it to her. It's like, well, I have to do the show, sweetie. So okay, well, can I sit up on the bed and read it while you do the show?
That's something. Wow.
The first year, every day that we had her, you know, she would nap, and I would do the show laying down, and she would be in the crook of my left arm, sound asleep. I mean, every day for a year. It was awesome. Just
how
awesome.
Beautiful.
So she got a lot of brain cell building right from the get-go.
One day you'll get a note from school that she's teaching.
Yes. Yeah, she's going to startle them with some things, I'm sure.
That's nice.
We're blessed. That's nice. We are blessed. Mm-hmm. She has taught me so much about what my job is as a grandfather, and of course was as a father. I knew to some degree when my kids were small. I wish I'd known when my kids were small what she has taught me, but I didn't, so.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
You know, that our real task is to function with them as love and see only that love in them, whatever their bodies are doing. And by holding that space, by really connecting and seeing them as that, my take or what I've learned from her is it helps to pull her into her body as a created spiritual being called love, into her body, and to keep her awake, you know, to identify her only as the active presence of love, whatever she's doing, and realizing that if she does something that brings up something other than love in me, that's my work. So I've gotten that on a whole new level with her and in the commitment to make sure that the only energy that I extend toward her, the only language that I extend toward her is that which comes from love. And so it's been an interesting learning experience and given me many opportunities to learn forgiveness. So how are you today, sir? What's on your mind?
Doing well, thank you. Doing well, and
I love the conversation yesterday. Let's go for
too.
It. You lead the way.
Well,
this is going to we're going to turn this into a series on the worksheet. So we're going to edit every show together and make it available as a package.
Beautiful.
And the conversation yesterday was perfect to augment that.
Mm-hmm. Really learned a lot and looking forward to learning much more. And I really appreciate what y'all do is segmenting these type of programs out, because if I am having lots of questions on the worksheets, I'm sure others are. And what's nice about this is you've gone through it with I forget her name, maybe Susan, back a short time ago. And then there's others before that, but I think each one has different questions. And listening to several different versions of this, I know it's going to help me tremendously. So I'm glad I don't always have to just rely on what we're doing today. We can rely on your work that's you've done on with others in the past, and that's going to really bring a nice round picture in my mind.
Yep. In the special archives, there are 20-plus radio shows where we've done a full worksheet with someone from start to finish, and, of course, each one has a different flavor. The second one on the list was one that we did Magda. And she did our first online or on the radio show multiple, like I think when she was complete, you know, we got into the Hydra worksheet session, and I think she had 17 worksheets to do by the time she finished. So it's a great example as to how when you're paying subtle attention to your subtlest thoughts, which most people don't do until they start writing it down, then it's a great demonstration of how to open levels and levels that, you know, most people didn't even know were there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know. I still don't realize the magnitude of that, how much work is there, but it's going to come. So, Michael, what is the name of that segment you mentched again? I'm not sure I've seen it. Heard that title before. You said it's in
the one that
archive?
I spoke of with Magda?
Yes.
In the archives, there's a set of special radio shows where either Dr. Tim or myself or Jeannie has walked somebody through a total worksheet. The second one in the list is the one that we did with Magda, and we call the worksheet we did with her, an Hydra worksheet. And if you remember, in Greek mythology, the Hydra was the creature that when you cut her head off, several other heads grew out of the stump of her neck.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Hydra, when you start digging into one issue, you start to see that that doesn't stand on its own. Oh, there's a piece over here. Oh, there's another one here, and there's another one here. Well, that particular worksheet, if I remember correctly, it's 11 years ago now, but she ended up with 17 different worksheets to do out of the one that she started with. And that's one of the reasons why I strongly urge people to do the worksheets in writing, because we're used to passing over the subtle thoughts that are in the unconscious that if we just were paying attention and writing, we'd notice a lot of the unconscious dynamics that we normally just gloss over. So the writing of the worksheet slows people down and allows them to look deeper into what the thought processes are that support the perceptual construct of the moment, the reality that their mind is showing them.
Excellent.
So that one's a fun lesson.
And Magda, I believe, is the one that helped me understand the importance of, first, helped me understand how she does the sheets. And I took off doing it that way. So I'm writing it out. Of course, I like to take notes and be able to look back on things. And so it really helps. It's been helping me a lot, Michael, a lot.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's been really, really a nice journey, and it's going to get better.
All right. Well, you lead the way. So, where are we going to head now? If you got a question from yesterday before we lead into the actual steps, and you want to just go right into the steps of the worksheet, where are we at?
Well, I appreciate that thought. I don't have any specific questions from yesterday. Some may come up, of course. Again, really helped me understand the three different segments of our mind. And as I look back on my notes, looking at the worksheet notes, we left off on 2A, where you were talking about Native Americans and generational patterns.
Right.
That's the last thought I have.
Okay. Well, let's start with 2A, a quick review. I choose to honor truth. You know, when I write out in number one, when I describe a perceptual construct of reality in my mind that's based in hostility or fear, I know that my mind is using corrupt data and is therefore presenting me with a lie. I mean, we don't have to know anything more about what's going on in the situation or who did what or when it happened and how it happened. We don't have to know one thing to know that our mind is lying to us. And that is my mind using some form of hostility or fear to produce this construct? If so, then by definition, my mind is using corrupt data. And one of the ways that we prove that to people is we'll ask the question, you know, have you ever done anything you regret? Of course, everybody kind of, in an audience kind of laughs and puts their hand up. Yeah, okay. What were you feeling that motivated you to do what it is that you now regret? 100% of the time, the answer is they were feeling something based in hostility or fear. People never do things they regret when they're really totally, completely connected to love. I have had people who said, oh, I was in love with someone and I did something I regret. It's like, oh, wait a minute. There's a difference between the false game of being in love and actually functioning as love. Lots of people, what they call being in love is really based in matching bags of garbage, and there's all kinds of hostility or fear under it, so that being in love can produce all kinds of crazy results. But when we're functioning as love directly, it's not dependent on another person. It has nothing to do with another person. So when I recognize that once I've filled out step number one and there's some form of hostility or fear going on, my mind's telling me a lie. And most people absolutely love their lies. And when we love our lies, we're living in blockage of truth. Remember, there's only 9 slots. Remember that Harvard research, 10,000 brain cells are firing. There's a maximum of 9 bits of data that gets into that perceptual construct. And if The 9 bits are filled with information based in hostility or fear. There's no room for love to enter. There's no room for truth to enter. And most people love that state because they're members of the most common religion on earth, and that is the religion of blame. You know, and of course, the religions of blame have the big blamer in the sky that's going to send them to some fiery place and punish them. So the whole thing from start to finish is based in blame rather than based in the Creator's essence, which is love. So step two, I want to move into this space where I'm willing to honor truth. So I choose to honor truth and willingly face and process out all disease-producing energies from all of my relations, the Takwiyas and the Native Americans. And, of course, if you look at that generational thing, that story of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years, which when you think about it, do you think a savvy group of people who know astronomy quite well could possibly get lost in a 35-square-mile area for 40 years? It's ridiculous. The desert, you know, you were talking about getting those other levels in mind. The desert is a code word for the unconscious. Most people usually wander around for a period of about 40 years before they start to suspect that maybe there's something going on they don't know about, something that they're hiding from themselves, or they realize that, gee, I've been through this 87 different times with 42 different people. I'm the only one that was there every time. This is about me. That's called living in the desert. And, of course, to get into the alternative, which the promise was the promised land, and my offering is the promised land is nothing other than a land of conscious co-creation, living in a state where we know that we are love and we're co-creating with love what happens in our lives, rather than creating out of the unconscious. And you'll remember in that particular parable, that particular allegory, something had to happen to get out of the desert. What was it? He said the old generation had to die off. I didn't mean everybody in old physical bodies had to physically die. That's a misinterpretation. The root of the word generation is genari. It means cause. All of the causes, hell in the mind, that produce these untoward results that we go, why are they doing this to me again, are those things in our own unconscious. So the causes, hell in the unconscious, that produce negative creation have to be faced and dealt with. Once we do that, then you get to enter the promised land. And that's, you know, for everybody. That's simply, you know, there's nothing theological about that. There's nothing religious about that. It's not a religious story. It's just, where do you live? Do you live in your unconscious and wonder why? Or do you live as a conscious human being and consciously create what happens in your life? Make sense?
Makes sense.
And the next step is to stand in the willingness to an expression of willingness. Actually, we used to have a down at the heart center just outside of the side sliding glass door. There's underneath where the bathrooms are now. There was a closet, and that's where we kept all the cleaning supplies. We called that closet cosmic grease. And that's what we call willingness. Have I got the cosmic? Am I willing to hold myself accountable, honor truth enough to work through what's going on? And if I am, then I'm going to go into what in the system of medicine I'm trained in, naturopathic medicine, is called a healing crisis. And a healing crisis means that, or is recognized as, I go along in my life and I realize that I'm not a physical being, but I'm an energetic being. Relative to my energy system, there are two qualities of energy. What builds a system up, what tears a system down. Integrative energy, yes, I want to play there. Disintegrative energy in Aramaic was called sin. It's an archery term. Fired at the bullseye, fired at the target on the archery range, and if you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper yelled sin. That's all the word means. It simply means off the mark. And so when I allow energies that are off the mark to enter my field, literally, and they enter as thoughts. And if they're thoughts based in hostility or fear, I create neuropeptides based in hostility or fear, which become chemistry in my cell. And disintegrative chemistry is the chemistry that comes from hostility and fear. And so if I put it in there and there were symptoms that happened when the energy was going in, it's only logical that on the way back out, the same symptoms are going to occur. So now am I willing to embrace that energy? Am I willing to look at, you know, the pain, the sadness, the grief, the hatred, the rage of my whole life, whatever I haven't dealt with, whatever I have been in the religion of blame about and talked about how it's all everybody else's fault? Or if I come from a bloodline of people who are always talking about how it's everybody else's fault, then I'm moving into responsibility, so I'm willing to take responsibility and go through these symptoms. As the energy starts to move back out, the symptoms are going to be identical to the energy as it went in. And it happens on three different levels, the physical, the mental, and the emotional. So on a physical level, healing looks like any kind of physical symptom you've ever had and low energy. On a mental level, healing looks like any kind of negative thought you've ever had and confusion. On an emotion level, healing looks like any kind of negative feeling you've ever had and depression. And most people don't want to go there. And most doctors, when they see that, go, oh my God, you've got a disease going on. We better get you a pill to shut that symptom down. And we're saying, no, no, no. Go the opposite. Go to willingness. Keep doing what vitalizes you, you know, instead of when the emotional pain comes up, running to the refrigerator and taking out a quart of ice cream, go to your sprout jar and grab a handful of sprouts and vitalize and strengthen yourself. Stand in willingness and allow your structure to process out and throw off what never belonged. So it can look like any kind of physical, mental, or emotional symptom that one has ever had. And if you're doing the right things, and there's some questions you can ask yourself when you become symptomatic to determine whether or not you're in a healing process or a disease process and whether you want to go for willingness or whether you want to go for a pill. So the first question you ask yourself when you notice you become symptomatic is, in a general way in my life, since I've been learning this new work, a new way of living, have I been doing more and more of the quote-unquote right things? Nutritionally, emotionally, relationally, am I living the commitment to, am I doing my forgiveness work? If I'm doing more and more of the right things, then I'm becoming vitalized. What most people do when pain comes is they run and find some kind of a drug. Hostility is nothing other than an internally produced drug. It's an anesthetic. It helps people not to feel their pain. When hostility doesn't work, that's when people turn to stronger drugs. There's actually a very interesting film out there called Thank You for Sharing. And it's a little risque because it's about addiction, but one of the primary addictions they're talking about in the movie is sexual addiction, how people turn to sex as an anesthetic in a way not to feel and deal with what's going on inside of them. And it's a really powerful portrayal because there are actually several different people with several different addictions that are, you know, that are reviewed through this film. And in each case, as each person is getting on the edge, the stress is up and, you know, it's so clear they've got goals that somebody or they are not fulfilling and their stress builds as that happens. And then just before, you know, like they're on the edge of, they're going to have a drink or they're going to go and, you know, do something sexually inappropriate or they're going to go sniff some cocaine. What they capture in the film very powerfully is in each case, before this person falls off the wagon and goes to their drug of choice, they go into hostility first. They point their hostility at whoever they're blaming. And when that doesn't work to reduce their stress, when they don't know to cancel the goals that are driving their stress, then each and every one of them then falls off the wagon. That's when the guy who's, you know, been sober for 20 years takes a drink, or the kid that's been doing, you know, drugs or cocaine goes and gets his coke, or the kid who's sexually addicted, when the stress builds, that's his mechanism. So what we're inviting people to do is turn to willingness. So first question, am I doing more and more of the right things? What's happening with my vitality? Have I hit a new level of vitality? It's the second question I ask. So oftentimes people will start doing this work and, you know, they're building, they're getting stronger. They're like, man, this is so great. I just love this. This is so awesome. And, you know, they get a really major opening, a major connection to love, and they go to bed at night and they're just like, oh, this is so awesome. And then they get up in the morning and wonder if anybody got the Mac number of the Mac truck to enter the room in the middle of the night. Because they wake up lower than the snake's belly. It's like, what happened? I was on track. Well, that's what happens when you hit the next level of vitality. Your system says, hey, we've got the vitality to process through this. Now we're going to open the next piece of work to be done. Many people get very confused. This is a really important piece for alcoholics or drug addicts to understand. You know, we've all heard about the guy who was, has been sober for 30 years. He just got his 30-year chip last night, and then, you know, last night fell off the wagon. It's like, what happened? All those friends, all that celebration, all that excitement, all that acknowledgement, whole new level of vitality. And what comes up? Literally, the healing crisis around what he used alcohol for. And if he doesn't know that he's got to process those energies out and that that's what's happening, oftentimes that's when somebody falls off the wagon. So am I doing more and more of the right things? Have I hit a new level of vitality? Third thing is, what's happening with my elimination? In a disease process, there's a tendency for there to be a restriction of elimination. And we're talking about all of the eliminative organs, the bowel, the urinary tract, the mucous membranes, the skin, the sinuses, the lungs are all eliminative organs. In a healing crisis, there will be a tendency for there to be some sort of a jam up in elimination. And if I'm doing more and more of the right things and hit a new level of vitality, then there's going to be an opening elimination and an increase. So an increase might look like, you know, the flu, might look like a sinus infection, might look like a skin eruption, might look like diarrhea. That's what healing looks like when the body says, I need to get this out of here. We're ready to move through this. I'm going to move it out. And there's that increase in elimination. So that's the third question to ask yourself when you're symptomatic. And then the fourth one is, am I craving the drug that I used to use in order to hide from myself around this issue? And the drug might be raging at somebody. The drug might be, you know, going and getting a sugar fix. The drug might be, you know, going into depression and, you know, moving away from people, isolating oneself. Whatever the addiction was, the thing that people used to try to control their pain previously, they're going to start to have that surface and move through. And if I'm in willingness, you know, if I'm in a state of resistance, unwillingness, I can take something that took 2 minutes, a painful experience that took 2 minutes to develop, and I can be experiencing that pain 10 years later. In willingness, I can take something that maybe happened over a period of 10 years, a major life issue that happened over a period of 10 years, and I can be through it in 2 minutes if I'm in willingness. If I breathe and I'm holding the space and I'm doing the work, and instead of going and getting the sugar fix, I go and eat the sprouts, or I just, you know, decide to fast for a day or so and drink water, then I'm giving my structure the opportunity to process through what it needs to process through, and it can move years of old trauma in seconds. Minutes. So willingness is the key there.
Okay.
Does that resonate anything? Any questions? Any thoughts?
Yes, I want to review, and I'm a little distracted on this, and there's a lot of activity around this place today, so I'm a little distracted, and I apologize about that.
Okay, no problem.
Let's see here, standing in willingness. The one point that really caught me, and I'd like to expound a little bit more, the same energy comes out of us that basically went in. So does that mean
correct,
if we have some fear-based trauma that... Ooh, when, let's just say I was 4 years old, I faced some fear-based trauma, and I am going to work on that fear now, that I'm going to experience the same fear as I work on this process. Is that what that means?
As you click right into a higher level of vitality, the mind will go back and reproduce the thoughts, the feelings, the constructs of the four-year-old. So one can go back. You're talking to someone, you know, you're doing a worksheet with someone, and they're an adult, and you're having an adult conversation, and they tap into, and all of a sudden they're like, they're so confused, and their level of intelligence is literally like a four-year-old. In fact, they may even, we've seen people who, if they're doing a written exercise, their writing will go back to the way they wrote when they were a four-year-old. Their language, their way of speaking, go back to that of a four-year-old. Yes. And that whole reality is going to need to be processed out. And that's where the breath comes in, and that's where the willingness comes in.
Okay. Wow.
We may even, you know, there's where the power person dynamic comes in as well. A person who's in denial, dissociating from their own pain, and the pain was something that happened, let's say, with their power person when they were four. The words that they will use, I mean, right down to the language will be the exact same word patterns as their power person used on them when they were four. They'll use those same words on the person they're projecting on. They'll make the same kinds of accusations as the power person did to them when they were four. And the power person's voice speaks through them as them. And they think that it's their own thoughts in their own voice. But what's really happening when they're in the middle of that healing crisis relating to something that happened when they were four, they're reliving that four-year-old trauma. And the mind counsels them. Remember, we talked about there are only three behaviors possible when one's stuck in the power person dynamic. And the behavior that rules is depends on the level of stress. When there's no stress, we'll do what we did to get along with our power person. When stress starts to build, we'll do what we did to resist and survive. When we become ultra stressed, we'll do what we did, our power person did to us that we hated the most. And if people look back and they remember what dad or mom did to them when they were four, here they are doing it to their own kid 30 years later. And totally, completely down on themselves for it. I'm like, I didn't want to say that. I am so sorry, son. I am so sorry. Dear daughter, I didn't mean to say that to you. It's your power person voice literally speaking through them. Recorded in the unconscious, triggered into activity by stress, and bang, it takes over. Takes over the voice tones, takes over everything. So that's all part of the healing crisis or the healing process.
So as one gets deeper and deeper working on these issues with the reality management worksheets, we're going to this is what we will experience.
Yes.
This,
absolutely.
This experience will come back up through, okay. And then
exactly.
You went
and
through
it's desirable for that to happen because that's how we work through it.
Mm-hmm. Our key is to choose that and be willing.
Yes.
To do it.
That's it.
And how we can tell if we're on the right track is the four statements, the four things you just described.
The questions.
What
I've been doing more and more of the right things.
Mm-hmm.
Right. More and more of the right things. Elimination. And am I craving the drug I used when this happened initially? So the child of four who was totally and completely rained on by the power person during their birthday celebration, just as they were eating a piece of cake and they got dressed down for you're supposed to let your guests have the first piece of cake, father raging at them. Here they are 30 years later, raging at somebody over some silly trigger. All the while going, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm doing this.
Yeah.
But until that's uncovered and we come into conscious relationship, here's what happens when we live in denial. Those unconscious dynamics that are inside of us, we cannot look at them honestly, and so we'll take those very dynamics and we'll use those thoughts, those emotions to build and fuel our feelings around a current situation. So those old energetic patterns will come forward. And take over from the unconscious level. But, and you know, the silliness of that solution is people can stand around all day and say, yeah, it's your fault that I'm feeling all this pain. But they're still feeling all of the pain. The only thing is they're in an indirect relationship with their pain. Because of their denial, the brain cells that contain the pain is being used to produce the picture of them, whoever we're blaming. So if I'm in that circumstance, am I live in denial, I still have all the pain of it. It's just that I don't see that it's mine. I've built my brain's image of them out of it, and so I think it's all about them. When I collapse that perception built out of my pain that makes me think it's about them, then by collapsing my projected reality, it opens a pathway into the underlying dynamic that needs to be healed. And now I get to bring that up directly. So now I feel the pain directly. And in the presence of active love, if I will allow myself to feel the pain directly, the pain will dissolve. That's the master solvent for pain, is conscious, active, present love. If I can't quite muster enough of it myself, you know, our conversation yesterday, what do? I go to someone who is able to hold the space, and I touch the hem of their garment, as that woman did with Yeshua. And by so doing, I get the extra vitality that I need to process through this fully. Otherwise, I might have difficulty processing through it, or it might be an extended process. So that's where it's always nice to have somebody who can hold the space for you. That's the power of having an accountability partner to do worksheets with.
Mm-hmm. The portion on elimination.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell me that again, please?
Sure.
I got the other three.
Once I'm standing in willingness, I've got a new level of vitality. The stuff that I have, you know, they call it stuff for a reason, that I have stuffed, literally that I've locked into tissue, I now have the vitality to open that and allow it to move, to be released. How is it going to release? There are several eliminative channels that will tend to open up. And as they open up, when I stand in willingness, I access something I haven't dealt with. And, you know, let's say, for instance, and I don't know why this particular example comes to mind or why it's relative, but that's what comes to mind. There was a gentleman who was at Heartland for almost 2 years on the support team. And he was in his 40s, and he had really nasty eczema. And he'd done all the medical things. He'd done everything to deal with his eczema. He was about a year into being there and dealt with some really major life issues. And his eczema just disappeared. So the kid was probably 38 or 40, and he'd had this skin elimination dis-ease for, you know, 35 of his 40 or so years. And it was pretty nasty looking. But his skin was trying to eliminate that which he wasn't willing to face. It was stored in tissue. once he was willing to step in and experience what was going on inside of him that he had denied and dissociated from and always projected on everybody else, all of a sudden his skin didn't have to work overtime to try to eliminate the toxicity of what he was holding on to. And it was based in rage. And as he was able to let go of that rage, all of a sudden, his eczema cleared up. Skin looked just fine. So the elimination process can look like anything, any part of the eliminative system. Sometimes people will touch into a toxic energy, an unresolved issue in their lives, and all of a sudden their breath just turns totally foul. In still point breathing sessions, I've had people over the years that had never had anesthetic in their life, but their mother had anesthetic in their birth. And as they were doing the still point breathing process, all of a sudden the room filled up with the smell of anesthetic. That's an eliminative process. And wherever that, my offering would be that wherever that anesthetic, you know, here's this adult, they've never had anesthetic, but mom did, so where else did it come from? Must have been an energy that came in when mom was going through the birthing process. Where was that anesthetic stored, and what did it keep anesthetized in this person's life all the years that they carried it until they were willing to open and deal with their own energy system on that level? And, you know, as you start to open, you never know what the healing crisis is going to look like. You never know what the process is going to be. It can look like, you know, lung congestion. It can look like sinus congestion. It can look like eczema. It can look like diarrhea. Oftentimes people's urine will begin to just turn dark and the smell is just horrendous as somebody opens and the old toxicity that's being held to is no longer restricted. It's able to move. So it can look like any kind of disease process that anybody's ever had. And these processes they haven't had, but we're in their bloodline. You know, I have a perennial issue for me. It's one I've been working on for about 10 years now, maybe a little longer than that. My last memory of my grandmother, I was her favorite grandson of a dozen or so. I was from a family of four kids, and I was the only one who would ever go to grandma's house and stay. Everybody else, no, they wouldn't. I loved to go there. I would go and stay there for weeks. And my last memory of my grandmother, of course, she was one of my favorite people too, was she's on her deathbed, and they had cut off her toes, diabetes. They had cut off the front half of her foot. Next stage, they cut off to the ankles. The next stage, they took her off both knees. That's when she died, was when they got to the knees. My mother had horrendous foot distortion. You know, if you've ever seen an example of somebody with, you know, toes bent and twisted and bunions and that sort of thing. I mean, my mother's feet. I never once heard her complain or speak of pain in her feet. But now when I see in my mind, with what my experience has been, when I look in my mind at what her feet looked like, she went through hell. And about 10 or 12 years ago, I started having foot challenges. And I've gone through many, many layers of it. And I still, that's one that I still work on from time to time. As I recognize the genetic component of that and stand in the space of willingness to embrace it, do what it takes to get to the next level of vitality to access that and process through it. And
so
then
Michael,
when it starts to move to stand in willingness.
I would like to ask, I know you mentioned mothers. Can this be anything in our bloodline back generation?
Anything. Yes.
It can be. Okay.
Yeah. Let's go to the book about genetics called the Bible. What do they say? The sins of the fathers will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations of those who hate me, of those who are separated from the active presence of love. When we welcome active present love in the presence of our healing crisis, whatever the underlying energy is, it dissolves. Look to the lives of the fathers, for ours are but a shadow of theirs upon the earth. If we don't consciously, purposely deal with and forgive the mind energy of those things that our fathers and our mothers and our grandfathers and grandmothers and their grandmothers and grandfathers and theirs before them went through, then the very thought patterns, the very word patterns will be resonated right out of our genes and come out of our mouths, and we'll go, holy crap, what did I say that? Where did that come from? And it'll be a pattern that comes from those generations.
You have a question about that in the chat room, too.
Oh, great. Let's go for it, Jeannie. Let's bring the question in. May help refine it some.
Wanting to break the pattern is often not enough to change it. So how do you stop it when you're in the midst of reacting like they did? How can you recognize the power person dynamic and change it before you do it?
Great question. And here's the answer. I suggest that you go back to day one of the radio show 11 years ago and then listen to every show from day one, 5 days a week, an hour a day, and then the last couple of years, 2 hours a day. Listen to all of that, and that's the only question that I or Dr. Tim will answer over the last 11 years. Tool we've got is what you use. Which tool you've used and you find most effective for you will be the tool that you'll likely pick up in any given circumstance. But it might be nothing more than to just stop and breathe. It might be to just take a breath and connect to active present love. It might look like sitting down and doing a worksheet. It might look like getting out the codependence worksheet and doing that worksheet. It might look like getting the commitment out and speaking it to this person that I have conflict with, or speaking it to myself when I'm looking in the mirror. It might look like responsibility communication. It'll look like every tool I've got, and that's what I'm going to do in order to change those dynamics. And it tends to be kind of a constitutional growth, so to speak. And here's what I mean by a constitutional growth. Let's imagine that we have a baby in a carriage, and we're beside the road, and a car pulls up beside the carriage on the road. The driver gets out and walks away, and the car does not have its wheels properly set, and the emergency brake set, rolls down the hill and crashes. The baby, laying in the baby carriage, is totally and completely oblivious. It doesn't know what a car is. It doesn't know what a crash is. It doesn't know that $100,000 damage was just done. Has no idea. And most people, when they first start out doing their work, have no idea of the hostility and fear coming out of their mouths and the damage that they're doing to themselves and to other people. And so most people start in oblivion. Then imagine that, you know, so that's the starting point when people start to become cognizant of what's going on inside of them and they're going to do their work. At first, no idea. Then imagine that we have a child of 3 that's standing on the curb. And the car pulls up and parks. The driver walks away. The car rolls down the hill and crashes. The child of 3 looks, and, you know, they're not quite sure what's going on. They know that the car, you know, dad just got out of the car. The car shouldn't be rolling down the hill. They're not quite sure what's going on. And they know that something not so good happened when it crashed at the bottom of the hill. But they don't have a whole lot of awareness of it. They just know, something's not right here. Constitutional growth. The child of 6 stands on the side of the road. Car is improperly parked. Dad walks away. Car rolls down the hill. This child of six goes, Dad's supposed to be behind the wheel. I remember hearing something about a brake, and I know something needs to be done. So he starts running for the car, but of course his legs are so short he can't even start to get to it. The car crashes. The kid of 12 stands on the side of the curb. The car gets parked, not properly. Dad walks away. Car rolls down the hill. The kid knows. Brake, car, uh-oh, there's trouble here. And he takes off, but his legs aren't quite long enough. He gets his hand on the handle to try to open the door, but he can't do it. It's not fast enough. The kid of 18 watches the car start to roll, knows exactly what's wrong, knows exactly what to do about it, and heads off down the hill, and his legs are long enough, and he does get the door open, jumps in, and hits the brake. The mature adult parks the car on the side of the hill, sets the wheel, sets the emergency brake, and that's the end of the problem. That's the kind of growth that comes with this work. At first, we're oblivious to what's my part in it. All I know is, you know, there's my uncle or my aunt or my brother or my friend or my employer over there, and they're the problem in life, and that's all I want to know about it. They are totally oblivious to the fact that they're co-creators in this situation and they've got a part in it, and when they clean up their part in it, that'll be the end of the trauma. It's a growth process that happens as one awakens and uses each and every tool. That's why we've been doing this radio show for 11 years, so that people have a place to hang out and build the brain cells for the deepest refinements, because you can only construct a reality for what you've got brain cells for. Now, the baby in the baby carriage had no brain cells for car, accident, nothing. The kid at 12 had built some brain cells. The kid at 18 that made the run and stopped the car had the brain cells to know exactly what to do. And so as one continues to work with these tools, each one becomes it's a matter of refining the skill, developing the ability to work with yourself as conscious, active, present love, and to clean up the generational patterns through forgiveness. That's one half of the journey. The second half of the journey is cultivating a relationship, taking time each day to center and get still and to be with the conscious, active, present love that you are. So I hope that answers the question in the chat room. And if there's any refinement needed, you know, let us know whether we got there or not. Michael?
Yes, sir. I do have one little wrap-up on the eliminative
yes.
channels. You cool. clearly talked about the physical. Can it, and I'm my guess would be yes, it's also emotional and spiritual?
Oh, yeah. Again, okay. Three levels, physical, mental, emotional. On a physical level, it's any kind of physical symptom and low energy. You know, when you start taking these things apart and restructuring, it takes a lot of energy. And so somebody can be high as a kite, and then they go into a healing crisis, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I'm so tired, I have to go. I can hardly keep my eyes open. I'm almost falling over asleep. I need to go to bed. Well, that can be where someone's stepping into the deeper levels of processing, and it takes a lot of energy to do that. So that's the physical level. Again, the mental, any kind of negative thought, right back from the beginning of time with our genes. You know, geez, where did this thought come from? I'm not even, you know, I've never thought thoughts like that. And somebody that's a member of the family there said, oh, that's exactly how Grandpa used to talk. When did you get that? Mm-hmm. And then the emotional, yes. Any kind of negative feeling and depression is what healing looks like when you step in and start to process out what needs to be processed. Willingness is the grease.
Thank
you. Cosmic grease.
Cosmic grease. I remember that one.
Cosmic grease. Yep.
Powerful.
So now number three, ready to go on number three?
Yes, sir.
So number three. You'll notice that in your whole life, unless you're a, which I know you're not, unless one is a generally just a miserable person, you're pretty happy with most everybody around you as long as they're fulfilling the goals that you hold for them. You're pretty happy with yourself as long as you are fulfilling the goals that you hold for yourself. But notice how, you know, when there's one of those things I wish I'd gotten done, I wish I'd achieved that I didn't, what do people do? Slam the door, kick the cat, rage at somebody? Notice you've never raged or been upset with someone unless they violated a goal you hold for them. You're never upset with yourself unless you violated a goal that you hold for yourself. Does that fit for you?
Yes. Yes, I can grasp that one.
Okay. So this is that's so important to understand, because this is a key way into first century Aramaic forgiveness, to actual forgiveness work. The Greeks did not understand. The Greeks turned forgiveness into, of course, they were, you know, most of the Greeks were in the religion of denial. They had somebody else to blame. So what did it become? What did forgiveness be? Okay. Well, Bill, you know, this is all your fault, but it's okay. I'll forgive you. I'll let you off the hook for the pain that my energy field is generating. Well, when you think about that, it's really pretty silly. I'm going to let him off the hook because my structure's generating pain? Like, that doesn't really make any sense at all. But when you've got a whole society that lives in denial and dissociation, it's all everybody else's fault. Of course, the logical thing would be, well, then, if it's his fault, then I'll let him off the hook. Properly labeled, letting somebody else off the hook for something is pardoning, which is a nice thing to do. But, you know, Vladimir Lenin says, if you want to destroy a culture, you know, here's a guy who's probably responsible for more deaths on planet Earth than anybody in human history. He says, if you want to destroy a culture, you change the meaning of its words. When they turned forgiveness into pardoning, they eradicated forgiveness. And now it became about, oh, I let you off the hook. I let you off the hook. I know. If I stand and shake the hand of 7.5 billion people on the planet, one by one by one, and let every one of them off the hook for the pain that's inside of me, have I done anything to change the pain inside of me? Absolutely nothing.
No.
So pardon somebody, if you will, and then when you accurately call that what it is, which is pardoning, then you recognize, now I'm going to do my forgiveness work. My system is generating some kind of trauma or pain here, so I'm going to go to work and clean that up. I'm going to remove what's at the root of this pain. Now I'm doing actual forgiveness work. And the key way into doing that is with goals. And we're down to about 60 seconds, so how about tomorrow we step in and start with the goal aspect of it in step three.
Okay.
All right,
sir. Sounds like a good plan to me. Thank you, Michael.
I'm with it. I'm with it 100%. And thank you for thinking through it and asking the questions and helping us to lay this thing out in this way. I think this is really going to serve people. So much appreciation, Michael.
Thank you, and same here. Appreciate you both very much, and enjoy your afternoon.
All right, take care. Blessings, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.